Welcome to another episode of Rolling Imperfection, the podcast for players and game masters to design perfect characters through imperfection. We cover all forms of game design, from interesting and engaging backstory creation to campaign and NPC development. Enjoy, remember to play what you love, and may your characters do something epic. Welcome back to Rolling Perfection, the podcast for players and GMs sort of story-driven campaigns. I'm Steve.
And I'm Kevin.
And today we're going to be talking about, more of the same that we've talked in the last few episodes, which if you haven't listened to, please go listen to. They are on building dynamic characters. And this time we're going to be talking about creating vulnerability.
Yeah. Part three. So, you know, don't be that student who, like, comes into the third day of class and, like...
Oh, God. The guy that missed the first two classes that shows up day three.
I mean, some people have like legitimate excuses, but I definitely have had people like on the third day of class be like, hey, can I join your class?
There's too many people that do that for it to be legitimate excuses for all of them, though.
Yeah. But yeah, how you doing, Steve? You doing all right?
Yeah, not doing too bad. Little tired. Heat sucks. I mean, it's gone down a little bit since it's been, but it's still, you know, a pain in the butt at night when... So fucking hot.
Yeah, I'm even in a cooler place than you, and it's been too hot for me as well. I've been like, ugh.
Yeah.
But I had a bit of a low key session. I feel like we got there.
It was a very
casual
session.
We did a little bit of stuff. Yeah, we did a little bit of stuff, and then we like just hung out for most of it. Like sometimes that happens. Sometimes you just get there, and you know what? If everyone's kind of like gelling and just chilling, I think you just got to go with it, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like a lot of times when you have a session, it's pretty much just like a get together to, you know, relax and have fun. And sometimes, you know, like, God, I can't think of an example of it, but I know there's a lot of times where we were like, hey, let's get together and play like, you know, War Machine or a board game or watch a movie. And then, you know, as we like get everyone together and we start hanging out and talking, we do something completely different than what we originally planned. And we barely even touched what we were originally going to do at all. If even that, it happens sometimes, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So, we got Spelljammer Adventures in Space coming out next week. Not next week for us, next week for you listening to this in the future.
You scared me a little bit. I was like, oh my God, it's already.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's coming out, and we'll hopefully have a review, not tomorrow, if you listen to this on the day it came out, but the Friday after, hopefully, maybe. So, yeah, but I guess we'll get to the topic, right?
Oh, yeah, I mean, or we could just talk about more about, like, lasers in D&D, I guess, I don't know.
That's true. So how do you feel about late now? I'm going to be honest, I'm a little hesitant about D&D in space. I know it's been a thing, but I don't know. I feel like if I want to do something in space, I'll pick a different system, but.
I think it just was, I could be wrong. So forgive me if I don't understand because I didn't play that module, but I believe it was originally like a D&D module where they like explained things just like, oh yeah, you have this weird like metal object that's really long that you find and you're like, what is it? And it turns out to be a gun, but you don't know that it's a gun. You don't know what a gun is. It just looks weird to you. And so you find all these things that you like slowly discover. It's like, oh, this is future technology. Oh, wow, this is really cool. So it was like a surprise factor in like the older editions, at least from my understanding. So it's more of like, obviously like that's not a surprise anymore. But it's more of like the nostalgia, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think it could be cool. Might have to see. I love plundering stuff from everything, so this will probably be no exception.
Yeah.
But yeah, today's topic, creating a dynamic character through creating vulnerability. Now, I thought I should start off with what is vulnerability? And I mean, there's no really getting around it, right? Vulnerability is a weakness. It is something that leaves a character open to attack, exploitation, all that bad stuff, right?
I mean, usually that's the way we think about it, but I'd argue in some cases, especially when it comes to things like character relationships. You know, showing vulnerability gives a chance for someone to go in there and try and help with that vulnerability too. So
that's true.
It could actually, you know, build up character, like relationships, but for the most part, yeah, it's a weakness. That's how everyone's going to think of this. That's what people are going to be worried about. I don't think you should be, but
I mean, the fact that you shouldn't be is kind of the point of this episode.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So, yeah. I agree with everything Steve just said.
Excellent.
Episode over. No.
Oh, okay. Were we a debate Steve, show before? Is that what it was? As soon as we come to an agreement, the show's done?
You know part of me wishes, right?
Yeah. I mean, maybe we need to have a debate show.
Cool. We'll add that. This is what our third fictional podcast.
Yeah, we've got the cooking after show.
Yeah, and the fan fiction show. Can't forget about the fan fiction show.
Yeah. God, if we do the argument one, it's gonna be like 3-hour episodes.
I mean, if you don't include the other person, that's just me. That's just 3 hours is just me. People have listened to this podcast. They should know. anyway. So vulnerability. Like that would have technically been me showing a place where I'm a little bit vulnerable, right? A little bit of ego.
Little?
A little bit of touche, sir. Touche, well played. You know, a propensity for long-windedness, like, oh man. Like, I make sure my villains don't do this. My villains are actually rather, like, I'm not prone to, like, long villain speeches, right, Steve?
No, actually, you prefer like more often to have the villains like not even talk to us very often, unless they're like secretly like mingling with the party under their noses type of thing. But usually you have them just like do actions to show who they are rather than say like, aha, I've poisoned the well. Like you'll just have them poison the well and have the characters figure it out.
True. Somebody poison the water hole.
There's a snake in my boot.
Yeah. And I think that is kind of, well, part of it is an attempt because I definitely remember us playing Legend of the Five Rings with the Kami, the Japanese inspired game. And he'd have these speeches written out. And the biggest problem with the speech, I've said it before, is your players will fucking lampoon it. So not even necessarily the players. And it's like, so I think that's part of it. But if I personally were a villain, I would probably get caught monologuing and get my cape sucked into an airplane turbine. Be bad times. Be bad times.
Honestly, I don't like having villains monologue in my games, and I don't think I would do it just because, like, or like doing like speeches or whatever, just because I have to like write something out and then I'd have to read it. And every time I've tried to do something like that, as far as like someone explaining how something works, like in my space game, I'm like, oh, I kind of have to, you know, give them the premise on how this was set up and why things are working the way they are in this. And so I've got to have a speech from when they eventually like ask the question, why did this happen? And it's just gone terribly. Like, I suck at reading.
right.
So I just go off the top of my head when I do it now. Just say, fuck it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm obviously a little bit more off the cuff as well.
Yeah.
And these are, in fact, vulnerability. So it doesn't have to come from a stat. I know a lot of people think, oh, vulnerability, it's my low intelligence score. It's going to do me in. And you know what? It might. I've been known to exploit a...
I didn't take athletics and I'm the tank wearing the heavy armor. I'm going to drown.
I haven't done that directly because I kind of think it's bullshit.
I do too. I'm glad that never came up. That was something I was constantly worried about with GMX.
Oh God, he would have.
Yeah, he would have. Yeah.
But yeah, we're going to be talking more about personal weaknesses. So you can, and I would like to note, and we'll probably bring it back around. You can build it off of a stat. In fact, I believe we recommended that in our Session 0101, Backstory 101, maybe both.
It might even have been in our, whatever we called our advantages, disadvantages, like episode 4, whatever it was.
Episode 3.
Episode three. God. Yeah. One of our first ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's an easy go-to, so.
It is. And it's definitely a good place to start. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about personal weaknesses that stem from, like, backstories or while playing. Kind of stuff that is interesting, but doesn't necessarily need to have, like, a stat or a skill or an ability or an obstacle or whatever in your game attached to it, right?
Yeah.
I in your space game, did not take alcoholism.
No, you didn't take the substance abuse or whatever it was.
Yeah, I think it took tragedy. But yep. Yeah. That's what I took. So it can start there. And honestly, I think I decided before, like I decided my backstory before I took anything, before I did the numbers. So that can even be potentially a good way. Although if you write the backstory first, sometimes you have a little bit of trouble cramming all the stats where you want them. In which case, you have to do a second draft on the backstory. But honestly, you should do more second drafts on backstories. Just saying.
Yeah, otherwise especially you end up with the issue I was complaining about. I forget if it was last episode or the episode before, where I had my character in your Leon Noir game, your steampunk game. Like, I was trying to do too much with that character because I pretty much, like, tried to stat them out, and then I wrote them and was like, okay, this is what I want to do. These are the things that they're good at, so I'm going to incorporate it in my backstory. And then, like, when it came to, like, roll some dice, like, I wasn't particularly great at anything.
Yeah, jack of all trades, master of none. It can definitely strike at the worst moments.
Yep.
But, yeah, I think we could get away from all that. So I wanted to start first with kind of backstory. And I feel like with backstory, people always go first, and I literally just said it. It's the name of the thing in Big Eyes, Small Mouth, the system we're using in Steve's space game, Crimson Knight. But it's tragedy. Tragedy is big, it's profound, and it's really good to have. I think the danger is that people may only think about tragedy, and I do think that's a little bit of a hazard, right?
Yeah, my character idea is that their entire village was destroyed and killed. And it's like, okay, any different than, like, if you've been playing for, like, 5 or 6 years, you know, is that any different than these other three characters we've had in our games that have had a similar thing? Like, is it deeper than that? Is there more to it than that? And there should be.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I almost think, like, deep-seated tragedy and then partial recovery from it can often be a lot better and make for a lot more dynamic of a character. Because they have that, like, core of, like, pain and stuff, but they also have, like, oh, I've seen, like, a brighter thing that's possible. And, you know, playing with the juxtaposition of those two things is what I live for. So
I agree. As, like, an example, in this game that Trong's eventually going to run for us, because we've peer pressured him into doing it.
True.
I actually have a character who lost his entire village, but really the only person he cared about was his daughter that he lost. But now he's going to incorporate. Wow, what even word was I going for? My brain just, like, that's gone. He's eventually going to meet the other player characters and kind of see them as, like, his family at that point. So he's gone through an incredible loss and he still thinks of, you know, his lost daughter, but it's more dynamic than that because he's now focusing on keeping the people that he's with alive that he now like treats as like a fatherly figure. So
yeah, and if you want to hear more about that character, listen to episode 80, Imperfecting Three Characters, where us and our friend Monster make some fun backstories and talk about those characters. And you know, it's only been 27 episodes. We'll get to it eventually.
Oh my god. Yeah, eventually. Yeah,
it's only been games take a while, we're adults, we have stuff going on. But yeah, so tragedy's good. Tragedy can catalyze some things, but I think you could also pull it back. You can look at disappointment. Disappointment has, like, a lot of potential. Honestly, I think it's definitely one of those things where the big stuff is important, but it can't just be, like, those little those little things, those little like frustration. I know it's not quite the spooky season yet, but as I was telling Steve, I do my planning for October very early because I'm usually very busy. Not just because I have a lot of birthdays going on in that month. It's also like prime school season and stuff like that. But anyway, Stephen King builds a lot off of that, right? Thinner is a person thinking about like weight loss. Road work is someone who gets really frustrated that he's going to lose his house. And these are like big things, or can be big things, but they're not like world breaking sometimes. You can build off of just like your character really hasn't gotten over something about themselves. And, you know, some people can just take a little bit to like get over that, but you don't always have to go grand. Sometimes it can be very small and sometimes it can be very petty. So, yeah, there's Misery, which stems from an author killing off a beloved character and a fan getting upset. So, you know, it happens.
I mean, in real life, yeah, it happens.
What's really funny is I'd only recommend Misery out of all three of those books. But anyway, so yeah, another thing I think that's overlooked is learning bad lessons from good things. I think this is tremendously overlooked, and I've totally done it, right, Steve? I've totally recognized learning bad lessons from good things. In fact, I think we're doing that in your space game right now.
I'm actually not sure what you're referring to in that.
So
what did you quote unquote learn?
We're learning to listen to and trust Nick's character, Delilah, because she's come up with the answer to several problems through very roundabout random means, like three or four times in a row.
And I was like, that's right, yeah.
Oh, we're learning like bad lessons from this. And I definitely have done it in my games, actually in my space game, where my party was like, all right, we're pretty used to like getting in, getting out, having a plan, knowing what's going on. And so then I designed a session, which I called Kill Squad X, in which they totally didn't. They didn't do enough. They're overconfident. They went in, they got tricked. Villain showed up, was like, hey, hey, hey. And then Monster's character tried to toss him into the sun, and that didn't work. So, yeah.
I remember that.
I know you do.
Yeah. How did that not work?
because you guys were overconfident. You ran
our overconfidence allowed him to survive being thrown into the sun.
Well, no. Him being prepared for you allowed him to survive being thrown into the sun. Characters can learn bad lessons, and you can do this in a backstory. You can have a character who just completely doesn't know. I've talked about Sabina a couple of times where she just didn't recognize like the harm that her civilization was built on. I mean, you know, it's the story of life, I feel like. And so I think that can be a really good way to just think about, okay, this is my character. My character has had these advantages. My character has had these good times. What bad are like, are they naive? Are they overly like cautious? What have they learned? So are they not overly cautious? Feel like my Simic character in your Ravnica game suffers from that.
I was going to say, I think both my Silent Spiral characters suffer from this.
A lack of cautiousness.
Oh, I'm sorry. Not a lack of cautiousness. I meant the overarching subject of learning bad habits from good things.
Ah, how so? How so for the listeners?
I mean, there's been a few times where Ray, who is my character in your first Silent Spiral game, has been trying to track down a certain someone who shot him twice, and he's fairly confident that she's guilty of something. Because she was in a suspicious person's house and as a maid. But, you know, as someone who's a maid, in his mind, it's like, oh, but she's here all the time. You know, like she's the maid. So she has to see, you know, like all of his, you know, pun not intended, but I'm going to say it's intended, dirty laundry. as it were.
Okay, so good. That was a good one. I like that.
Oh, okay. but he kind of got it into his head that, you know, she must like understand what he's doing and choosing not to rat him out. And by doing so, she's in cahoots with it. And by the fact that she shot him twice when he was just trying to open a closet door.
In a house he broke into.
Yeah. Minor detail. See, this is how it goes. You know, it's like, oh, that's a minor detail.
Exactly.
You know, like, instead of being like, oh, this person can give us information or whatnot, it's like, no. They're criminal.
See, and that's overthinking things. That's overthinking things and having kind of a negative filter.
Yeah.
Over it. And I think that's good. Yeah, that is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. I think a little bit of this can also be, I have differences between cultures, but it's culture, socioeconomic status, you know, gender, anything. It can be any differences. I think where a character comes from can definitely cause like weird little like slips in knowledge. I've done it and definitely played around with it and in your space game with Charlotte, because she has a very, so in his space game he created like these three different magical girl like systems.
I think you
have four now, but yeah.
True.
And most of the team, so one of them was like special limited amount of slots, and I'm the only one who picked that, and the rest of them, with the exception of one person, have the same one, kind of this like more basic types. And I've the last couple times we've played it, I've had my character Charlotte be like, because she doesn't like, how would anyone get it? Like, she doesn't know how those things work. They don't know how she works. And so there's been a like couple of little jabs that cause like these little friction. And I talked about that friction, inter-party friction, last episode. But she's definitely taken some jabs at like the like, oh, how the Obi-Wan, how uncivilized with your little like guns and swords and stat, like, ugh, how, what even, what? And they're like, you create eels. And I'm like, yeah, that's perfectly normal. And I think these things can also create like weird little vulnerabilities. You know, you don't know something, and you should try to think about what your character doesn't know as much as what they do know. I think that's a very good thing. And I think you should try to think about what you know your character doesn't know that they don't know they don't know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's kind of like, if you want to think about it in more like fantasy game terms, if you think about like a noble character who is like raised to be, you know, a person of the court or whatnot, having to go out and talk with commoners. Maybe they've been kicked out of their household, and so they actually have to go and live with the farmers and, you know, go to taverns and stuff like that to eat or whatnot, instead of, you know, having, you know, a butler or a maid, you know, serve them and clean them up and stuff like that. And so they're out of their element, and you might be like, well, that's kind of common. But one of the things you can think about is like how that person would view these people. Like, they might be snobby. That might be the first thing you go to as like, they're a noble. It's like, oh, I'm not gonna do that, you know, like, there's no way I'm gonna get my hands dirty. But at the same time, you could be like, what is this alcohol you're drinking? It smells really good. And then before you know it, you know, they're drinking alcohol, a lot of alcohol. They're used to wine and stuff, but now they're having mead, and they're getting horribly drunk because it's the greatest thing they haven't had before, it's brand new. And
then someone brought tequila, and things get really crazy. Oh, sorry. I went a completely different way, but
a little bit too much personal information for the podcast. They don't need Steve, to hear about your stories.
Shh. It can hear you. It's right next to me. I'm not actually drinking.
Oh God!
But I do have a thing of tequila next to me, so, unopened so far. The commie
for now. We'll see how long that lasts. We've got a bit left on the dock.
True. Actually, you made me think of my dad in restaurants, who's not like overtly terrible. He just, he doesn't treat the like wait staff like humans.
I thought you were going to tell the story, and I was like, you're going to tell a story here?
Oh, shit. I think we now need to, We're going to take a quick commercial break to tell a funny story.
Oh, God. Because that's the only thing I can think of when you talk about your dad and restaurant.
Okay. This has nothing to do with any, but you know what? Maybe we'll have to, you know what?
No, we're not save it for the end of the outtake.
Save it for the end of the episode. Save it for the end. Just remind me.
Okay, got it. We'll be on topic this time.
So I'll tell that story a little later, I think. But yeah, those are the kind of things that can really be built into your backstory. And we've obviously talked a couple ways about how it can kind of come out of playing, but those were the things I had kind of just like, they're easy to write into your backstory. You can go for it. I think playing is where you can really, especially in game terms, really see this happen. Because one of the main things that can create vulnerability, like we were just talking about, is the congruity or incongruity between backstory or past experience and what the player's experiencing, or what the player character technically is experiencing in the game, right? What Steve was just talking about, they have a noble background, but now they're experiencing life among the common people. And that creates a place where they don't know, creates a vulnerability, creates misunderstanding, creates small weakness.
Yep.
Once again, doesn't need to be huge, just needs to be small. Because spoilers, it's the small things that make things more real. It's not the big thing. So.
True. Something I just thought of in regards to that that even if they are small little things, just like having them available and out there as you role play your character, these think of them as like little opportunities for things to happen between the other characters or for the GM to latch onto. They're almost like mini plot hooks is a way to think about it. Is it that vulnerability gives an opportunity for something to happen? So if you're like, oh, well, I don't touch, you know, like dirt and stuff because, you know, I'm a noble and I shouldn't be doing that. Well, you know, and GM's like, can I just have a cart go by and have some mud splash on them? Like one of those cheesy 90s movies.
Or just you're a hypochondriac.
A hypochondriac? What is that?
That is someone who thinks they're sick all the time.
Oh, God, yeah. That's a horrible life to live.
But it's real.
Oh, God. Yeah, they could be like, oh, no, I'm terribly sick. You know, like I have to do all this manual labor. I'm exhausted. Therefore, I must be sick and ill. I'm around all these people. You must be getting me sick and ill with your commoner diseases. Oh, God. You got to have someone that has like an obsession with like holding their like an old grandmother is just trying to like be endearing to them, is like clasps their hands. It's like, oh, how are you doing, dearie? And they're like, oh, my God, you're going to fucking kill me, grandma.
Oh, man. So, yeah. Yes, exactly. So there's also, and we literally just spent an episode, a.k.a. last episode, episode 106, talking about this, but challenging their ideology. I wanted to expand a little bit more in this episode on that because we mentioned cognitive dissonance, but I can't remember if I went into it.
I don't remember either, actually.
Yeah. It is the holding of conflicting ideas in one's head. Spoiler alert, we all have it. We all live with it. Our brains, sometimes they don't, like when we become aware of it, it becomes very uncomfortable, but oftentimes we aren't aware of it. So like, you'll be like, oh yeah, I hold this belief. And then you'll have another belief that is contradicting, but you like them both. And then they fight. And then eventually, who knows? You could just have them both. But usually you like rationalize them, or you like excuse it, or you dismiss it. Those type of things, those are so much fun. Like having a character who literally is like, okay, I am this way and I hold this belief, but also I have this belief. It can be a lot of fun to play and can definitely create that kind of randomness you're looking for, where you have the two things and you're like, oh man, I'm a very courteous person. But I really dislike this. What do I do? You know?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a good example, but this is something that's usually like a big impact, I think.
I think it creates smaller. See, people usually think about it because, you know, it's got the big term. But honestly, it's actually something that humans have a lot of small ones of, and we're just not really, we don't really think about it.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say, is that like, I can't. Like, it's hard for me to think of like a simple example, because like the examples that I can come up with in my head are like, oh, you know, you're like, are people that, you know, we have in our culture is, you know, we, like I recently watched a YouTube video. God, I wish I could remember the channel. so I don't, unfortunately, otherwise I'd recommend them here.
No, but, shout out for you. No, I'm just kidding.
They talked about like an old like folk tale from Japan about taking your grandmother and leaving them up on this mountain to die because of like limited food and stuff like that in like feudal Japan. And like, that was apparently a thing. You like they had a name for taking your grandmother up into the hills to let them die. And they basically would grandmother would just go approach you and be like, it's time, take me up to the mountain. And you'd have to take them up the mountain, carry them on your back and then drop them off and just leave. But they talked about a story where essentially the, I guess there's like multiple versions of this story, but this guy took this old woman up a hill and she was breaking, you know, sticks and twigs as she was, as they were going up. And he's like, why are you doing that? And she's like, so you have a path to lead you back home. And he's like, fuck this. I'm taking you home. I'm taking care of you. You're staying with me. You know, like the conflict there of like, do I do what's culturally like demanded of me? Versus, you know, like this person that's important to me. Like I can only think of like the large scale stuff because the small scale stuff, the only thing I can think of is like, oh man, I've had a bad day. I really need a drink, but I know if I drink, I'm going to drink a lot. And I really shouldn't do that. That's bad. That's like the only thing I can think of outside of that, which we've already did an alcohol example. So I don't know.
I mean, the non-alcohol example is, man, I've had a really bad day. I should go get some ice cream, but I really shouldn't. Because that'll get...
I'm going to get fat.
Well, not only that, I mean, the sugar can keep you awake or put you to sleep too early.
Oh, that yeah, that's a good one. I was going to say, yeah. Like, there's been so many times I've been like, oh, man, I really want some tea or some coffee right now, but it's like 8 o'clock at night. But, man, I really want, like, a cup of coffee. That sounds really good right about now.
Yeah, when I'm not recording with you, Steve, my wife and I go on walks, and sometimes... like I have occasionally if we, you know, a Coke with dinner, sometimes when I'm feeling like droopy and I don't want to go to sleep early. But then sometimes I won't finish it before the walk and I'll have the rest of it like after the walk, which is
Yeah. Okay, that's a much better example. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's definitely like, and these things will just come up. Once again, we're not saying you have to like pre-plan all these little things. Just like think about them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they can come up just, you know, through common character interactions, right? You have challenges, probably have some hate. I've mentioned the easy one of theft, having stuff stolen. That can definitely create some issues. And then, of course, you know, love is not easy. Love is hard.
That's easy. I just roll the seduce. I'm solved.
That's a form of love. you make Vivi's life sound so easy. It is. I assure you, it is not. That was a reference to one of our characters. She's very upfront, and you know, she knows what she wants, and she takes it, and that's good. Well, that's good some of the time. As we mentioned, it's a good quality that can be bad. Good qualities can be bad. True. Yeah. Naturally, when you're playing, you have those landmark things like significant defeats or victories. But I think when I say significant defeats or victories, you're thinking of like the big battles with like, you know, that rival you freaking love to hate. But it can also be like losing constantly to a character that your character considers inferior. But you lose at like chess to them constantly. And you're like, how is this? What? And you know, you get those little waves of friction. That's what we're looking for. So, yeah. Not to mention injuries, bad times with spells, curses, all that kind of stuff. Got to think about the impact. Think about what it might do to your character. And, yeah. Got anything else there, Steve? I feel like I've said the same thing like four times.
I mean, it kind of sounds like that because I mean, like, they're all very similar in how you do vulnerabilities. Vulnerabilities, like, I mean, we've explained it already, but it's basically just, you know, having a weakness to give an opportunity or something to happen, or for your character to be able to make a choice in reaction to being in a situation where they are vulnerable that allows them to either get over their vulnerability and like evolve as a character, or to have a unique and interesting perspective on something because of that. You know, like you might have a character that has a fear of spiders, but because of that, they have to know which spiders are the most dangerous, so they know when to like run or when to attack. It said spider. I mean, I guess I'm assuming they're larger spiders than, you know, the spiders we have, unless you live in Australia. I'm sorry.
Those things
are fucking huge over there.
we just got rid of a spider here that was small, but my wife looked it up, and we had to have it removed because apparently they can cause their bite could put you in the hospital. So, you know, we have some fun ones over here.
Yeah. I mean, there's, I don't want to think about it.
So arachnophobia aside.
Yes.
This is all to say, and now you might be thinking, okay, they're asking me to make a bad choice. And
listening this far, well, obviously we're not saying that you have to do that.
Yeah.
Some of our examples, that's not what we're saying at all.
I also want to say, a lot of times I feel like there's this dichotomy between the good choice and the bad choice. And that is a bullshit dichotomy. Because there is more likely for a player, there's the safe choice, there's the interesting choice, and there's the lulz choice, which may be the interesting choice. Sometimes they overlap. And then there's the I hate my friends and my GM choice, which you should never take. So what I'm saying is, you're not making a bad choice. You're looking for the interesting choice. And interesting equals fun for the party. Note, not just the player.
Made me think of something that kind of applies to. That'd be a good thing to do. It's like sometimes if your group is the type of group where you guys decide like, oh, I'm going to play this type of character or I'm going to play that type of character, then you may not run into this too much. But sometimes if they're, you know, everybody's making their character independently, and they just kind of show up with what they've made, you know, with characters that might be like, for example, maybe two characters are both really good at lockpicking. They decided that that's something that they want to like specialize in, is they're both really good lockpicks. Well, how many people does it take to pick a lock? Only one. You can't True. Really have two people pick a lock at the same time. They can take turns. Maybe if your DM allows it, and time given,
they can annoy each other while the other one picks the lock and create, you know,
that's
negatives.
True. What I was going to say is, depending on the situation though, is that if you find that your character is doing most of the lock picking and you're like, hey, you know, like maybe I'll let my, the other person have a go at it, but you don't really like, maybe the character you're playing is very outgoing, and so that's not something that the character would do. Maybe due to whatever the situation they're involved in is, your character decides to do a different thing. Like maybe they're trying to get out of a place before they get overrun by a bunch of enemies. And so you have to pick the lock like quickly, and you're like, well, I'll defend you. You pick the lock, type of thing. Like you can sometimes use that to make things more interesting for the other people at the table. I don't know if that explained what I was trying to say really well, but hopefully it did.
I think so.
Okay, so but essentially you can use your character's weakness of like, oh God, like I can't perform, maybe can't perform under stress, or maybe, you know, they have like that like combat itch, or I have to be like the star of the show. Like lockpicking is great, but you know, taking on the enemies and being the defender is like much more interesting and action packed for that character. And so they'll decide to do that so that the other player can do something that they haven't gotten a chance to do much of yet.
Yeah. So yeah, interesting equals fun for the party, or, you know, most of the party. A lot of times you can have it go badly for the character, but like the players are still having fun. That's what we're looking at.
Yeah.
End note, interesting does not equal stupid or bratty. Huh? Don't be that person at the table. Don't do it. No one wants that.
No one likes that. No.
So yeah. And to that person, you occasionally have a fun phenomena. Note the italics there on fun. Those indicate sarcasm. but my character. And yeah. So the fun thing about this is that it's not an excuse. You can, I've definitely given a knowing, are you sure, to a player. And I honestly think players should be able to give like an, are you sure, to like other players too. Because sufficiently complex characters should have multiple options, right? The but my character is, oh my, it's what my character would do. Like, my hands are tied. I just what my character would do. And no, sufficiently complex characters have multiple options. Go for the more fun, less douchey, low percent option when your entire table is staring at you with like the glary eyes, you know. It doesn't happen often, hopefully. I believe in you, listeners.
I was going to say, as you were saying this, the only person I could think of was Eb.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's very static in his characters, which is, you know, again, what we're talking about. You want to have a dynamic character, not a static character. So don't decide that, you know, like, oh, well, it's what my character would do. You know, like, I designed them to be, you know, kind of a douchebag, so I have to do the douchebag things. Like, no, you don't always have to do the douchebag thing. Like, it's fine to make a character who is, you know, I mean, am I allowed to say douchebag? Is that it?
That's fine. I'm good. That's with fine. It.
Okay. Yeah, they can be an a-hole. You can be a douchebag, whatever you want in the backstory. And I think that's fine. But the whole point of a story is to have a character evolve over the point of it. You don't want to have a character in a movie that starts exactly the same as the way the movie ends. They should learn something and develop something. Otherwise, you know, what was the point of the movie? You're just like, was it just like to watch action? I mean, it's fine, I guess. But if you're doing like a story-driven campaign, you should have a dynamic aspect to the character, and they should change in some way or be able to overcome something. So you should be looking to make those out of character decisions for some character like that, who is, you know, an asshole or wants to constantly betray the party. Maybe they see the reasons why they shouldn't betray the party, and you, the rest of your group is like expecting you to, like, you know, betray them, and then you don't.
Yeah.
I think that's cool.
Go for the low percent option. Not just the, are yep. you sure? Maybe also a, surprise me, you know. Make it a little bit of a challenge too, you know. The are you sure set, that might not be good enough. You might be like, you know, I mean are you sure? You should surprise me, like a challenge, like come on, you can do better. Also note, many things can be rationalized for good and for evil. So, you know, if you think you only have one option, you're not thinking hard enough in a game setting. In real life, things are terrible, and I don't want to talk about it. But in a game, you usually have more than one option. And if you're a GM who's trying to give your players only one option and they're not fucking up a lot, that's bad. Bad GM. Bad. I know this is a character episode, but bad. On the subject of GMs, don't abuse vulnerability, please. I don't want to spend long on this. I've said this before. Have fun with it. You are as much under the thrall of make things interesting for the party as the player. I know you think you're in charge. You're kind of in charge. So,
think about it this way. If you're the GM and your characters are allowing their vulnerabilities to be out there, think of it like you have a friend who has, like, a close friend who has, you know, like a bruise on their arm. You might go there and you might like poke it. It's like, oh man, this looks pretty bad. Is this hurt? It's like, yeah, it fucking hurts. So what are you doing? You know, like, you'll have a little bit of banter and it'll be fine. You know, like, it'll cause a little bit of pain. They might be a little, you know, upset that you bothered to do that. It's like, what are you doing? You asshole. But don't go there and you'll punch them in the arm or something like that. Like, obviously you're not going to go that hard on them. Think about it that way. It's like you're just trying to like poke at the vulnerability more so than you are trying to, like, you know, take them down with it.
True, true. Steve, harshly using real examples from our childhood, but that's okay.
No comment. No comment.
So yeah, that's creating vulnerability. I'm actually not 100% what we're doing next.
Decided somewhere. It's written down.
It's either going to be keeping your character options open or adapting a character concept. I have them in that order, but we might flip it depending. So, okay. Yeah. Anything else, Steve?
Nope. I think we're good.
All right. So be sure to play what you're lot. What play? What the fuck?
Play what you're lot.
I think I was just said play what you're live. What? Wow. Okay. So I'll get to it.
See, okay. You see when the person who never fucks up fucks up.
Only took me 107 episodes. Okay. So remember, play what you love, and until next time, may your characters do something epic.
Woo! Second time's a charm. Well, third time's a charm.
Yes. And we still have the story. Oh, man.
Yep. Yep. So okay. Stay tuned if you want to listen to the story after the closer.
Thank you for listening. If you have any comments, questions, interjections, queries, notes, formal challenges, or suppositions, please email us at roimperfection@gmail.com. That's roimperfection@gmail.com. Or follow us on Twitter at roimperfection or Instagram search roimperfection. You can also visit our website at roimperfection.com. If you enjoyed our work, leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. Have a great week, everybody. So a long time ago, my family went to a restaurant that was mining themed. And we went around the table, like literally all the way around the table, and everyone ordered. Now, I had gone there with my cousin, who's like a really jovial guy. He's really cool. And so we're sitting there and he's sitting next to me and everyone's going around the table and ordering. And it gets to my dad, and my dad, with no sense of anything, looks up at the waiter and says, "I'll have the glory hole." And I go in my mind, just like, I look around, like no one has reacted. No one. And I'm sitting there like, did no one just hear that? It was an actual item on the menu, PS, but he had just like no sense. I've been told they've taken it off, but I'm looking around like, am I the only one who heard that? What's happening? What's happening?
You're in the Twilight Zone, Kevin. No one heard that. This stuff's not funny.
True, true. So I'm like, okay, so we eat the entire dinner, and it's not short. It's a family dinner. Like, it's an hour. And then we get up to go. And so me and my cousin, we get up to go. We say goodbye to everyone. Like, it's literally extended family. You know, we're going around because of grandma, stuff like that. We get in my car. I drive out. We're literally on the freeway, like 10 minutes away. And my cousin just goes, "I'll have the glory hole." And he just starts cracking up, which causes me to crack up because it was hilarious. And like,
I can't believe he like maintained his composure knowing your cousin. Like,
he held that in for like an hour and a half.
Damn. Yeah,
so that's the story that Steve was referring to earlier.
Yeah.
I hope you found it funny. Because I realized that a couple episodes ago, I totally messed up the nuke story, because I should have put it as M being put in math jail because we were on like math planet, but I forgot. So here, there's that tidbit too. His nuke got shut down and neutralized, and he got thrown in math jail. So, haha. This ends our new segment, Story Time with Kevin.
The fourth podcast style.
Oh my god, I'm multiplying.
Podcast show.